Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. There have been a lot of so-called jukebox musicals in recent years using the music of the Four Seasons, ABBA, Neil Diamond, and others as a starting point to weave a story, sometimes about the people who made the music, other times as a musical backdrop for a different story altogether. Now comes a different kind of musical production using music most of us know well. The music of Sting. But this time, the story is told in dance, with Sting supplying the underscoring with new versions of some of his greatest hits. The dance is the work of Kate Prince and her dance company in conjunction with Sadler's Wells in England. Sting's music was coordinated and often arranged by Alex Lacamoire. He's a four-time Grammy, three-time Tony, three-time Olivier, and Emmy Award winner for his work on Hamilton, Dear Evan Hansen, In the Heights, and FX's miniseries, Fosse Verdon. The production is called Message in a Bottle, bringing the world's refugee crisis to life as the title on the main curtain crumbles into sand and turns into people. Before your very eyes. Message in a Bottle plays the Knight Theater April 2nd through 7th, and Charlotte is one of the few American cities on the tour. We're fortunate for that and for the fact that we have three of the creators of this remarkable piece with us for the hour. Kate Prince is the director, writer, and choreographer, and the founder of Zoo Nation, the Kate Prince Company. Alex Lacamoire is also with us, and Lucas McFarlane, the associate choreographer and a dancer in Message in the Bottle. He also joins us, and welcome to you all.
Thanks for having us. Good to be here.
Thank you.
Kate, first of all, congratulations on a brilliant work. I watched it on video the other day. It is just stunning. I don't have better words than that. How did you come up with the idea, though, to tell this story of the refugee problem that we're facing around the world and set it to the music of Sting?
Oh, it's a very good question. I don't have the most kind of like clear answer because I'm not really sure anymore. Lucas might be able to help me because he's been there from very early on. But I think they were two separate things really initially. One was that I had this sort of moment where I was like, I've always loved Sting's music. I've always wanted to choreograph to it. Maybe there's something I could do narratively with his music. And I think maybe, Lucas, am I right in saying that it was our first workshop when we chose six of the songs that it just sort of started knitting together a story about family? And I think his lyrics are quite political, and there were lyrics in there already that made me think of certain things. And I hate using this word, but it was quite organic the way we came up with it.
Well, let me ask you a question that I have asked and everybody has asked of people who write music. Which comes first, the music or the lyrics? But let me switch it up a little bit. Which came first, the story you're telling in Message in a Bottle or the decision to use the music of Sting in a way that would create a story, if that makes any sense?
Oh, yes. The ambition and the hope to use the music of Sting, that came first. But there was a photograph that was in the press of a little boy called Alan Kurdi, and he was the same age as my daughter at the time. And I remember being downstairs at night researching, and she was upstairs. I just put her to sleep. And this little boy looks like any toddler who would sleep on their front in their cot, but actually he's been washed up on the shore having drowned. and him and his family were crossing from Syria, and they were washed up on the shore in Turkey. And I couldn't shake that image and that little boy and the kind of really privileged white middle class Western life I was leading in London, my daughter safely asleep upstairs, and thinking, what would me and my family have to go through to put Ella in a boat and cross open water at night and risk all of our lives, especially hers? And then I kept coming around to it can't be a choice. You're fleeing something more perilous than the risk of crossing the water. That was that image that made me want to tell a story based on that subject matter. And that image came into my world at the same time that I was having these discussions about Sting's music.
I think it's interesting that a still photograph can elicit a whole dance piece that goes on for well over an hour and a half and tells this story of a group of refugees who have to make impossible choices in order to survive. And it starts in moments of joy, moves through moments of peril, and ends up with hope in the end. Give me a thumbnail of what the story is.
I think so much of the story is really influenced by one particular film, which is called Rania's Odyssey. And it's a roughly 20 minutes short documentary about a young woman called Rania who fled Syria. And she films the whole thing on her phone. And although I watched loads of documentaries, this one 20 minute documentary was so personal on this one life. And she had a sense of humor throughout all of it. There's a scene of her in a tent on the Macedonian border, and it's raining, and outside the tent it's just mud and it's dirty, and they've been there for months. They get stuck in on the Macedonian border. They can't go any further, and she's in a tent and she's watching James Corden's Carpool Karaoke and laughing about it. And the sense of humor this woman has in the face of so many awful things happening around her. Like, the next scene is them being attacked with tear gas by guards at the border. I think that sort of lightness that she manages to have, and the resilience and the hope that she had as an individual. And so I think that for me, there's a massive parallel with dancers. Dancers exist in pain and they keep going. To dance is to experience pain, but not to show it. And for me, that's kind of the refugee story, is to experience the pain, but the pride and the resilience, to the strength to keep going.
This show, Lucas, you play one of the siblings. There are three principal siblings who we see at the beginning, and they are separated as the show goes on, but they leave their homeland after it suffers an attack. They go on this dangerous journey. You're highlighting the fragility of life and death, and what these people find as refugees when they arrive in a safe spot, which is not necessarily safe. And it's all done without a single spoken word. And yet it is as clear as the nose on your face, the story. How, as a dancer, do you approach that with such specificity?
Well, first of all, it's a feat of genius to be able to do that. And that's what Kate's done. And it's wild, like, that you don't need a single spoken word. And that story is so clear all the way through. And as a dancer, for me, who loves telling stories, it's a gift to be able to not be doing a 2-minute piece on TV or to not be doing a 3-minute performance as a part of something else, but to carry a character every night for close to 2 hours and get to walk him through this journey every night, and have it be way more about what I'm saying than what I'm actually doing, and saying with my movement and my emotion on stage, and make it more than what the steps we were doing, use the steps as a device to tell this story. I think it's such a unique thing, and I've not really seen much like it, if I'm being honest, out there right now. And I think that's why it has such an impact on the audiences that come, because they have no idea what to expect at all. And that's the best way to enter the show, is to have no expectations and just experience it the way that you do.
Well, there is no single spoken word, but there are plenty of sung words, Alex,
absolutely.
And they're all the music of Sting and the Police, but they were not written to tell this story. But somehow this works, and it's kind of a tribute to the selections of the music that were made along the way, how those songs were ordered, how one piece literally dissolves into another. Talk about how you achieved that.
We knew that we had a treasure trove of material to work with, not only in the list of songs that Kate had put together, but also in these tracks that we were given. So to know that you had a track that was Stevie Wonder's harmonica solo on Brand New Day, isolated by itself, was just like a miracle. Sting was also very collaborative on the process and very giving and very, very generous of his catalog and his time, and even joined us in the studio. One memory that I will never, ever forget was the fact that we actually had the good fortune of recording his new vocal on Every Breath You Take specifically for our show. And he had one night to come to the studio, and we knew that we had this arrangement of Every Breath You Take, which was a slowed down version of the song, very different from the way people know it from the 80s. And it was basically Sting at a microphone and me in the other booth playing acoustic piano while he sang.
Every breath you take, every move you make, every bond you break, every step you take, I'll be watching you. And every single day, and every word you say, every game you play, every night you stay, I'll be watching.
So I got a chance to accompany the Sting on a recording of perhaps his biggest song of all time for the show that he supported and gave his blessing to. So to know that we had that freedom was really liberating and just allowed us to just go. And I liken orchestration and arranging and producing really to painting. And I'm sure Kate and Lucas would probably feel the same way about their dance and their storytelling, where it truly is you have choices to make. You have colors, you have movements, you have moods, you have vibes. And basically, how do you choose? How do you work with what you have in order to move a story forward, to make sure that you're supporting the moment and the story, make sure that you're not getting in the way, make sure that you're advancing moments and not sticking out like a sore thumb. So truly, what I love the most about our process on Message in a Bottle is that it was all done in tandem. Like the fact that we would all get together in a room and be like, okay, what could this be? What shall we do? And to know that we had a moment to try an idea, to open a door and peer inside and decide, do we want to try this? And sometimes we would go further down that rabbit hole before we realize, nope, this isn't working, and climb back up, dig another hole somewhere else and try something else. But it was never too late for us to change course if we needed to, because we were shaping it together, getting, just getting vibe checks with each other, making sure that we all felt good about what we were creating. And I don't ever remember any of us kind of having fights or struggles or rows about, oh, it should be this, no, it should be that. Like, we all could tell when something wasn't clicking, and we all as a group decided, yeah, this isn't right. And then when we found something that was, we would all look at each other and nod in agreement and be like, yep, we found it. This is it. Let's keep going.
Alex Lacamoire, who's the music supervisor and arranger of Sting's music for Message in a Bottle, which runs through Sunday at the Knight Theater. Kate Prince, the choreographer and director, with us as well. Lucas McFarlane, too. And we are coming right back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins.
Every ripple on the ocean, every leaf on every tree, every sand dune in the desert, every power we never see.
There is a deeper way than this, swelling in the world. There is a deeper way than this.
We're talking today about Message in a Bottle, which opens tonight and runs for the week at the Knight Theater. It tells the story of refugees by focusing on a trio of siblings who are uprooted from their homeland and left to find new places to settle and live. It does it to the music of Sting, and does so through dance, without a single word being spoken. We're joined by one of the dancers in the show, who also served as associate choreographer, Lucas McFarlane, Alex Lackamore, who helped develop the music for Hamilton and In the Heights, among other shows, is also here. He helped sculpt the music of Sting for this production. And the whole thing is the brainchild of director-choreographer Kate Prince. She put it together first in England with her group Zoo Nation, the Kate Prince Company. They're well known across the pond. So, Kate, how would you describe your work, and particularly the choreography you created to tell this story in Message in a Bottle?
We've been going 21 years, and I really struggle with dance and music, actually, being put into sort of categories and pigeonholes. I think it limits us when we do that. I think there's positives to that as well, but Zoo Nation has a history of starting in hip hop and street dance. And the reason for that being is that I used to be a backing dancer and I knew a lot of backing dancers 25 years ago. And I quite often thought that the backing dancers were more talented than the singers that they were dancing behind. But there was no company for them. They weren't ballet dancers. They weren't contemporary dancers. There was no real showcase platform for them. I've quickly realized that I was never going to be the best dancer, and it wasn't the right path for me. But I knew I wanted to be the maker of dance. And I particularly had one dancer called Tanisha Bonner, who our company was really founded on her and her work. And I wanted to create a company that really showcased her as an artist. So that's our history. That was our foundation. But over the years, it has expanded as much as it has in, we've done a lot of Lindy Hop and swing dance. But we have more recently, in the past 10 years, worked more with what I would say is contemporary dance. Although contemporary dance, see, pigeonhole, contemporary dance just means the dance of today. Yeah. What is the dance of today? Everything is the dance of today. Yeah. TikTok is the dance of today. So it's quite an eclectic mix. And I think Message in a Bottle really focuses on contemporary movement. It really focuses on the individual dance artists being able to express themselves. And when you see Message in a Bottle, we have 14 dancers on stage, but a company of 22, I think, and the cast rotates every night, so you get different people and they interpret it slightly differently. Their solos are always a bit different. So we have a lot of breaking and a lot of contemporary dance. Those are the kind of main foundations in Message in a Bottle.
So, Lucas, all theater is collaborative, but when you work with a choreographer like Kate, who has her own company and a list of credits a mile long, how do you collaborate as a co-choreographer, so to speak? How did she define your role? How did you contribute to this production?
Yeah, I mean, stylistically, I'm quite versatile in what I do, but I am known for my contemporary dance work. And when Kate reached out to me to be a part of the project, that was the main focus of bringing me on, because she's not so versed in that world. And her company is a hip hop theater company. So popping, locking, breakdancing. And the main two styles she was interested in fusing was breakdancing and contemporary. And bringing me on to kind of head to the contemporary side of that. And she knew the Elvis Brother character, which is the one I end up originating and am on tour playing right now. His main style is contemporary, and there's lots of other contemporary in the show, like Shape of My Heart and beautiful numbers like that. So it was easy to kind of know that that is what I was heading at all times. But she is so generous in her way of opening the space to my ideas and my opinions and stuff like that. And she beautifully has zero ego and is just kindest creator and creates such a safe space to create and to play with stuff. And we, having never worked together, we melded really, really, really well. And it was quite an easy process for us, which was lovely.
I mean, you have your idea. She has her idea. She has the overall vision for what she wants this to be. And I understand collaboration, but the end product is so specific, so highly detailed. You have to be in the right space at the right time. How long does it take to figure all that out? How did the two of you come up with what you wanted to do when, and how long did it take?
We sat down over 3 days. We went to actually the south of France, and we kind of took ourselves out of life, and we got all these sticky notes to all the song names, and we wrote out the show first. And she knew, you know, the order she wanted and what story she wanted to tell based on the documentaries and the work she had seen, kind of in the story she wanted to tell. And then the way that Kate creates, which is beautiful and I've taken with me moving forward, is that she blocks out every number first and makes sure that the story points are there and what we need to say. What does the audience need to know in this number? What is the main, you know, thematic nature of this number? What do they need to walk away with after we're done this number? So we block it out and make sure all those points are there, no steps. And then once that number is completely, you know, blocked and spaced on stage and we know those moments are happening, then we went in and filled in all the steps. And it was a really great way to ensure that the story was what was first every time.
Kate Prince, you're the choreographer who worked with Lucas and the dancers through this process. And you said earlier that you wanted to be a creator of dance, but it strikes me that in this piece, you're also a creator of worlds. And the story that you're telling uses no words. It's essentially set on a blank stage. The dancers are hemmed in on three sides by solid walls. And the space is defined by movement, by bodies, lighting, projections, and occasional small set pieces. It gives the audience the feeling that these people are hemmed in, almost claustrophobic, certainly contained or confined. And then you move from that to an open, choppy sea. All these folks risk losing their lives as they cross this body of water, and it is completely believable. How did you conceive of that?
I really like collaborating with people, and there's so many people's brains that have made Message in a Bottle, so many people. The thing about the walls closing them in, though, I remember this really distinctly. I'd done a show, I was a choreographer on a show called Everybody's Talking About Jamie, and it was originally done in Thrust in Sheffield Crucible, and the set design sort of like is a mirrored three lines of a square that thrusts you out, and the top and the bottom sort of mirror the lighting. And then it transferred. And when it transferred, the design stayed the same because the design was good, but there were then suddenly wings, and people were walking through these sort of normal black wings across this lit line. And I watched it and I was like, the story is gone. The world for me is gone, because you're, I'm so aware of the wings. And I've always wanted to do something with dance where you kind of, there's no wing. And even though we've got little secret doors in our wings where people can pop in and out, ostensibly it looks like they're trapped, and the back wall looks solid as well. And we can open little holes, but I think I just wanted the world to be contained, and I didn't want the brain to go to reality, which is once you go off. Maybe it's my brain. My brain gets really distracted by that stuff. So I kind of wanted to trap them in there, but also because they're trapped in the situation of their lives, that it was a sort of a metaphorical, let's trap them. They can't escape what's happening to them.
Let me bring Alex Lackamore back into this conversation. You arranged the blending of, and in some cases, the reorchestration of Sting's music as the soundtrack for this piece. And you've done a lot of that in your musical career, but you're also a composer. In musical theater, the music has to propel the story forward. It has to help tell the story. And although Lin-Manuel Miranda was the composer of Hamilton, you, he, and the director shaped that piece musically, moved songs around, chose specific instruments, etc., to tell the story in the best way possible. Were those same principles applied here in using the music of Sting?
Well, the good news is, in a case like Hamilton, Lin-Manuel Miranda is the composer. He wrote the songs, he wrote the lyrics, he wrote the chords. He provided really amazing demos that pointed the direction of where he wanted the songs to go and how he wanted them to sound. And my job just became the executive, if you will. Like, it was my job to figure out how it gets performed live. How do we put these melodies onto vocal harmonies with a choir behind them? How do we end songs more powerfully? How do we, what instruments do we choose to be in the band? And if we have a string section, what do they play and when do they play? If there's a guitar, is he playing an acoustic guitar? Are they playing an electric guitar? Are they playing with a pick? Are they playing with the fingers? All those choices, those are just colors within a paint box. So my job truly is to make the music sound as though it always meant to sound that way. Try to make it serve the story, try to measure up to the brilliance of the composer's creation. And in this case, Lin-Manuel Miranda spun such gold. Really, my job was not to mess it up. And as I mentioned, just make musical choices, try to add suggestions, add my voice as a writer wherever applicable, and just make the thing shine in a live setting. That was really my job. Most of the work I've focused on has been theater work that is meant to exist in a live setting. And then if there's a cast album that follows, we make decisions about how to capture that live performance. What I loved about Message in a Bottle is that truly we knew going in that the music was going to be pre-recorded. So it was actually quite liberating to know that we could design the music to sound a certain way, to fit a certain mood, and to create a certain vibe. A big important thing, lesson I've learned, honestly, in the last few years of orchestration is up until a certain point in my life, when I would write, I would think to myself of a piano as an instrument, a piano that is meant to be played in any theater in any town. So like in my brain, as I was writing, a piano in New York was going to sound the same as a piano in Iowa or a piano in Florida, whatever. But now I learned through my work with Justin Paul, who is one of the composers of Dear Evan Hansen, it became so important about the sound of that piano. So it couldn't be just any piano. The piano had to sound a certain way and it had to be evocative of a certain mood and be treated with a certain kind of reverb. And it might not be a grand piano. It might not even be a baby grand piano. Sometimes an upright piano with smaller strings provides a different kind of sound and feeling and emotion than a grand piano might. So those kinds of choices became really integral to how Message in a Bottle sounds.
You'll remember me when the west wind moves upon the fields of barley. You'll forget the sun in his jealous sky as we walk in fields of gold. So she took her love for to gaze a while upon the fields of barley. In his arms she fell as her hair came down among the fields of gold.
When you come to see Message in a Bottle, everything is pre-recorded, but all of the music is iconic. I mean, people have expectations. They know every note because they've heard all that music before. These are essentially Sting's greatest hits. Mostly, he's singing, but you've interpolated other singers into the mix to fit the tone of the piece at the time.
Will you stay with me? Will you be my love among the fields of barley? Sky as we lie in fields of gold.
You've also reorchestrated some of the songs, changed the tempo. Did that give you any sense of trepidation or sense of responsibility that you wouldn't feel working on a completely original show?
So the good news is for me, and this maybe comes from my theater training, Mike, is that you just work with what you got. And in this case with Message in a Bottle, we were given the gift of stems of recordings of Sting and his albums. And stems are basically isolated tracks, if you will. You might have the vocal stem, which is just the vocals by themselves, or the guitar stem, which is the guitars by themselves. And I'll give you an interesting story about something specific to Message in a Bottle and the creative process within it. There's a fantastic song that everybody knows and loves by The Police called So Lonely. It's from their first album. And the way we know and love that original recording from the 70s, it's written in a particular key signature where Sting sings really high in his voice. And this was early in his career where, you know, it's the punk days and that's what influenced The Police. So there's a big, like, almost like angry kind of crying out, if you will, of the voice.
Well, someone told me yesterday.
So Kate knew she wanted to do So Lonely, A Message in a Bottle. But the stem that we were given, the vocal recording of Sting's voice, was in a lower key. And it was Sting, not a recording from 40 years ago, but rather a recording probably within the last 10, I'd say. So his voice is weathered with age and in a beautiful way. But I knew Kate had in her mind for this moment the old recording, this old kind of a grittier sound. Instead of shying away from what we had, I leaned in and I suggested to Kate, well, Kate, we don't have to go with this big, loud drum and bass, ska, reggae kind of feeling to it. We can take the punk out of it. And actually, I picked up an acoustic guitar and I said, Kate, it could be like this. And I played a figure and all of a sudden we created this arrangement that instead of guitar fills from Andy Summer, they were me playing piano fills on the piano. And instead of the drums coming in, it was a string quartet giving you accents and rhythm. So all of a sudden, So Lonely became more longing and it became more beautiful and it became more heartbreaking simply because of what we had to work with. Like we had no choice but to be pointed into a certain direction and figure out how to create a story and how to craft a moment. And I actually found that liberating. I actually found it like a crossword puzzle. I enjoyed the challenge of being like, okay, we actually don't have an option to have a different vocal recording. So we therefore need to create something that's gonna feel as if it was always that way. And when you see the staging in that number, in that moment in our show, I feel that sense of organicness. I feel like, oh, it was always meant to sound this way. And that was our goal.
We'll have more with the creators of Message in a Bottle, set to the music of Sting, in just a moment. It plays this week at the Blumenthal's Night Theater. This is Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. Message in a Bottle is the work of our three guests this hour. It runs this week at the Blumenthal's Night Theater. In the show, British choreographer Kate Prince tells the story of a phenomenon happening all over the world, migration. There are many causes of these mass movements of people. In this case, violence uproots a family from their home, and Message in a Bottle allows us to experience their journey to new homes and the dangers they face along the way.
There's a little black spot in the sun today. It's the same old thing as yesterday. There's a black hat car in a high tree top. There's a flagpole rag on the wind.
The story is told through dance, created by Kate Prince and her associate choreographer Lucas McFarlane, with Sting's music arranged, adapted, and blended by Alex Lacamoire, who worked on major shows like Hamilton, In the Heights, Sweeney Todd, and others. One thing that makes artistic endeavors particularly successful, I think, when they are, is being at the right place at the right time. And this show is certainly an example of that, because refugee migration is taking place all over the world, including the United States. And to understand just how big this problem is, the Chicago Sun-Times, in a review of your show when it was touring there, framed it this way. Imagine, they said, the states of Illinois, California, New York, Ohio, Wisconsin, North Carolina, and Michigan emptied of all their roughly 110 million combined inhabitants. Every single person gone. Every family uprooted. Every community vanished. That's roughly the number of people currently displaced on the planet, driven from their homes by conflict and or persecution. That really puts message in a bottle, it seems to me, into perspective and into a place that everybody can understand. Were you aware of all those numbers when you set out to do this?
I think that once you know all that stuff, you can't escape it, can you? We, a lot with the company, it's very hard for them because I keep saying to them, remember, you're telling a real story. So on those days where you come in and you're annoyed about, I don't know, you've lost your mobile phone or something, remember that the story you're telling is real. And that's really hard when I'm asking them to do that 8 shows a week, because I'm asking them to show up and invest in truth and to care. And you don't always care about your job every day, do you? There are moments when you just want to, you know, you don't, and you just want to get on with it. But it feels like there's a massive social and historical responsibility that if you're going to tell that story, you can't mess around with it. It's you know, you can't demand that of performers or collaborators. Either they care or they don't. But I'd hope that they do. I'd hope that we sort of get through to people and that it's got some resonance. And you know, you say about not a word is spoken. And you're right, that the performers have to communicate so much without speaking, but lyrically, there's so much content there. Like Alex said, you know, we took the song Brand New Day, and really the core that we needed from it, apart from Stevie Wonder's brilliant harmonica, was that little nudge of storytelling. We're starting up a brand new day. And you see the same day start for three different characters. And just by having that one sentence, it's helping connect, I hope, for the audience, what's happening. Starting up a brand new day. So Sting's lyrics, so fragile, oh my God. I know it wasn't written about our story, but I feel like he wrote it for our story. When blood will flow, like it's, yeah. And Inshallah actually is the only song I believe that was written specifically connected to our story. Sea of worries, sea of fears, in the
country.
And once I knew that song existed and read the lyrics of Inshallah, it's where in our story it's when they're on a boat and they're fleeing. So lyrically there's so much, his lyrics are so lush and so rich and there's so much going on. Inshallah!
Lucas, as the associate choreographer, you helped craft this, shape it, tell the story. How did the process work?
We sat down over 3 days and we kind of took ourselves out of life and we got all these sticky notes to all the song names and we wrote out the show first. And she knew, you know, the order she wanted and what story she wanted to tell. And then the way that Kate creates, which is beautiful and I've taken with me moving forward, is that she blocks out every number first and makes sure that the story points are there and what we need to say. What does the audience need to know in this number? What is the main, you know, thematic nature of this number? What do they need to walk away with after we're done this number? So we block it out and make sure all those points are there, no steps. And then once that number is completely, you know, blocked and spaced on stage and we know those moments are happening, then we went in and filled in all the steps. And it was a really great way to ensure that the story was what was first every time. What was the audience getting from the characters?
Strikes me as an unusual way to work as well. Is it?
I have never experienced it, actually. So I don't know if it's super unusual. I'm a super story-based creator myself, and I'm really about intention and what's going on. And she even pushed me further into that realm, which I loved, because I think dance is a beautiful art form to tell stories with. So like I said, it was quite easy for us in that way as well, because we had a lot of the same goals, with what our work wants to do. She tells incredible stories through hip hop dance as well. And that was always both our forefronts at all times.
This is about an hour and a half of nonstop movement. The dancing is very athletic. Although you're one of a score of people in the cast, the dancing, as I said, never stops. One reviewer called the energy level of this unflagging and astonishing. And I agree, it is. No matter how well-trained you are, no matter how athletically fit you are, how do you keep it up?
I ask myself that every night. It is the hardest piece of work I have ever done. It's the hardest piece of work I've ever seen in regards to what it's asking the dancers to do. And it is unflagging and it is nonstop. But that's part of the wow factor of it. That's part of why people are on their feet every night, like without fail, because the athleticism and the sheer like awe of what's going on stage is its own thing, let alone the story that's being told and the incredible soundtrack that's behind it. And I think you push through because the story is really important. We always say, like, once you get into that first number, you're in, because you can't help but be, because the story is happening. Everyone's looking at each other. We're all in it together. Sometimes before that curtain goes up, it's like, how am I going to do this tonight? And then once that curtain goes up, you just do, and the music helps that so much. Like, it's wild.
So Lucas McFarlane here helped choreograph this and is in it every night. Alex Lacamoire, you seem to have the easier part of this arrangement, because your work is done, essentially, but I'm sure the work to get it to where it is right now when we see Message in a Bottle was enormous. The list of shows that you have participated in or are responsible for, and the importance of the shows that you've worked on, is enviable. You began, as I understand this, playing piano at the age of 4. At what point did you know this is where you wanted to take music?
Music has been a part of my life, as you mentioned. Since I played piano at age 4, that's where I started to play an instrument. But I'm told that music was a part of my life even at age 2, when I would like listen to the stereo speakers at home and be transfixed by the music coming out of the speakers. Music has just always called me. So I never had a plan B, really, is what it is. There was never a point in my life where I thought, oh, I want to be a doctor or a lawyer or what have you. Just music is what I did. It's where I was led. And I don't know that I could have told you, oh, hey, what I'm doing right now is where I would have ended up. I couldn't have predicted that. Like, I didn't know that, for example, theater was something that was in my purview, or working on films was something that I would end up doing. I just knew I wanted to work on music, period. I wanted to work with people who inspired me, on music that inspired me, and I've just been following that lead ever since.
And Alex, you've done everything. You got your start in New York theater as a rehearsal audition pianist and a keyboard sub for The Lion King. You orchestrated the off-Broadway show Bat Boy. You were a copyist on Avenue Q, associate conductor for Wicked, and of course you worked on In the Heights and Hamilton for Lin-Manuel Miranda. But what do you think of yourself as a musician?
That's a great question. I think the answer changes day to day. I just consider myself a musician, first and foremost. I'd like to think of myself as a creative, because especially when I'm arranging and orchestrating, I get to actually create and design lines and harmonies and counterpoint and structure. And I get to weave the sonic landscapes, if you will. At times I do enjoy being a straight producer. I do enjoy being in the studio, working with musicians and actors and coaching performances out of them and being able to design even within the studio. But I'm also a music director, because I like to be in a live setting and I like to kind of give suggestions about how something can happen. I love that live collaboration that happens in theater, and that moment that Lucas mentioned when we were all in the room designing and creating together. You know, the piece became better by a suggestion made by someone else. It didn't happen in a vacuum, and that's the part of my job that I love. So I don't know that I can pinpoint myself as one particular title. So that's why when you go to my Instagram page, I think it just says music guy. That's kind of what I think myself as.
What would you say to young people who aspire to do, Alex, what you do, or what you do, Lucas? What would you say to them? Where do they start? What's required? I'll start with you, Lucas.
I usually say the same couple things to young people, and I teach them. And one, that what you have in the world that no one else has is that you are yourself and there's no other you. And I think the sooner you can learn that and it, you know, embrace that, you know, it's the superpower you have. And then I think the second thing I say is like, don't be afraid to ask for opportunity. I don't believe in luck. I think luck is when hard work meets opportunity. But so much of my career has been from not being afraid of being told no and asking for opportunity and being okay with, you know, being humble in that way and being like, I'd love to do this. I'd love to work with you. Like, what are the chances of that? And I think people should never shy away from that, because lots of us do want to help the next generation as well. And lots of us do want to give opportunity in that way and pass on our knowledge. So those are the things I usually kind of say to young people, because they're the reason I have my career for sure.
Alex?
I encourage people to stay curious. I know how hard I worked and how much I wanted to learn and how I actually leaned into the things that I didn't know instead of running away from the things that I was like afraid to do. I think putting yourselves into those situations where you are not the smartest person in the room is where you learn and grow. And I know I have always loved staying curious about how things are put together. So I would transcribe all the music that I loved. I would try to pick up the guitar and learn that guitar lick, or pick up some sticks and try to bang out that rhythm on the drum just to know how it was put together. So that kind of exposure I know informed me as a writer and as a performer. So I just tell people to keep learning and keep doing things that stretch you. Even most recently, I had the good fortune of music directing Sweeney Todd, a revival on Broadway. And I hadn't conducted with a stick in about 20 years. So I took conducting lessons to make sure I was prepped and ready to go. So I didn't want to be the one to sink the ship. So that was a moment of me embracing the fact that I get a chance to be outside of my comfort zone. So here I am at 48 years old, still wanting to learn. I think that's what I encourage people to keep trying to do.
Lucas, once these refugees leave their home, there are no good choices that they can make. There are dangers everywhere. There are moments of death. There are moments where women are being abused by soldiers, and it's all expressed in dance. Actors often talk about performing in stories that are gut-wrenching and how it can affect them for a long time after the curtain comes down. Is the same true of dancers in your company? What kind of a toll is this taking?
The emotional toll is a lot, because we have to tell a very, very important and poignant story with the respect and the gravitas that it deserves every night. Because when people are watching, we're telling a lot of people's stories and you never know who's in the audience. And the messages we get after are quite moving. And to do that every single night is a lot to ask as well. And to go to that place every single night, and as a cast, we all really understand with gratitude what we're being asked to do and the burden, but also like the gift that is to tell that story every night. And I always say that dance is a beautiful language because it's understood by all. We literally lead an hour and a half with just emotion, and emotion can be felt by every single human. You get to experience this show viscerally without all the words getting in the way.
We often view refugees, migrants, through a negative lens, as unfair as that may be. But I think as people watch this show, you'd be hard-pressed not to experience what it's like to flee from everything you've ever known, from everyone you've ever known, to take with you only you and your own life. That's it. And put that life at risk. And that, I think, sheds a whole new light on what this experience is for those people and what it does to them and how we should react to them. I'm curious, though, why the title, Message in a Bottle?
The refrain, sending out an SOS. And I love it in the climax of Act 1 and at the end of Act 2, that's the lyric we end up with, is sending out an SOS, asking for help. You're asking for help from the world. And we all see every day that so many people are suffering, and we all just go about our business because we're all right, we're safe, we just crack on.
Message in a Bottle, choreographer and director Kate Prince, along with Alex Slackamore, the music supervisor, and Lucas McFarland, the associate choreographer and a dancer in the show. Message in a Bottle plays the Night Theater through the 7th. Tickets at BlumenthalArts.org.
Celebrating 25 years on the air, Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.